کچھ حضرات علماء کرام اور بزرگ حضرات تشریف فرمائیں، میں ان سے ادباً گزارش کرتا ہوں کہ وہ یہاں اپنی جگہ پر تشریف لائیں، وہ علماء کی جگہ وہ نہیں ہوتی. حضرت مولانا حمید لاکھی صاحب دامن برکاتہ، ان سے میری خاص گزارش ہے کہ تشریف لائیں اور ہماری سرپرستی فرمائیں. اگرچہ کہ آپ وہاں سے بھی بیٹھ کے توجہ ڈال رہے ہوں گے، لیکن یہاں قریب میں آئے تو ذرا کنیکشن زیادہ ہو جاتا. اور اسی طرح اور بھی حضرات علماء کرام پیچھے ہیں، جناب مفتی اخلد صاحب اور مولانا اسجد صاحب اور مولانا فاروق صاحب. اس طرح میں ان سب حضرات سے گزارش کرتا ہوں کہ ہم قریب آئیں. آپ حضرات دیر سے آئے، ورنہ بہت پہلے ہم نے یہ کہا تھا کہ حضرات علماء کرام اگر ادھر تشریف فرمائیں تو ادھر لا تشریف لا. دوسری بات یہ ہے کہ الحمدللہ ہم سب اب اپنی روح کی غذا کھا رہے ہیں اور ہم روح کی غذا سے جو ہے متمتع ہو رہے ہیں. الحمدللہ ہمارے جذبات ایمانی کے اندر جو ہے طاقت پیدا ہو رہی ہے، اس کے اندر قوت پیدا ہو رہی ہے. آپ حضرات کے لیے یہ اعلان ہے ہمارے بڑوں کی طرف سے کہ انشاءاللہ جلسے کے اختتام پر آپ کی جسمانی غذا کا بھی پوری طرح سے لحاظ رکھا جائے گا اور آپ کے لیے انشاءاللہ کھانے کا انتظام رہے گا، اور آپ تمام حضرات انشاءاللہ کھا کر تشریف لے جائیں گے. اب میں محترم حضرت مولانا فرما رہے ہیں کہ آرام سے بیٹھیں، بے چین نہ ہوں انشاءاللہ آپ کو، اور دیر سے جب جتنا دیر سے ملتا ہے تو اتنا اچھا لگتا ہے. اس وجہ سے آپ حضرات سے گزارش ہے کہ تھوڑا اطمینان سے بیٹھے. ویسے اللہ کے رسول صلی اللہ علیہ وسلم کا تذکرہ سننے کے بعد کہاں بھوک لگتی ہے؟ اگر کسی کو بھوک لگتی ہے تو پھر خیر وہ کوئی بری بات نہیں ہے، لگنا چاہیے، لیکن حضور صلی اللہ علیہ وسلم کا تذکرہ ہو رہا اور ہمارا دماغ جو ہے کھانے میں، ایسا نہیں ہوتا. ہم اتنے بھی گئے گزرے نہیں ہوئے ابھی. ہم اللہ تبارک و تعالیٰ سے امید رکھتے ہیں کہ اللہ کے رسول صلی اللہ علیہ وسلم کا ذکر ہمارے لیے روح کی غذا بن جائے. میرے بزرگوں، اب میں مزید تاخیر کیے بغیر اور ایک مقرر کو میں دعوت دیتا ہوں، اور میری مراد ہے محترم جناب سہیل بنگاری صاحب تشریف لائیں، اور یہ انشاءاللہ جو انگریزی جانتے ہیں ان لوگوں کے لیے انگریزی میں انشاءاللہ بیان کریں.
بسم اللہ الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. Dear brothers and members in Islam, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. The seerah of Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم can be compared to a rose or a flower. From whichever side you look at it, from whichever angle you look at it, there is a scent to it, there is a beauty to it. A person who wants to find out about Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم's life as a husband looks into the seerah and takes out those lessons. Those who want to find out about the life of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam as an amir, as a leader, takes out the lessons he wants from it. The person who wants to find out about Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam's life as an imam, as a father, takes out those lessons. The lesson that I wanted to talk about is that the life of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam as a abid, as a person who prays, and the importance of salah, because it touches every single one of us, male or female, small or big, young or old, rich or poor, every single one of us is bound to pray salah. And so if we look at the seerah, how Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam looked at salah, how was he as a person who prayed salah, what importance did he give to salah, what did he say about salah, then inshallah we can better understand his seerah from this angle of salah and namaz. So Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, his life as a person who prayed salah, you know, is that his ibadah is something that we can never match, that we can never match or compete against. But that being said, that does not mean that we are not required to pray salah, we are not required to concentrate in salah, we are not required to have khushu in salah, because Allah Azza wa Jalla says in the Quran, بعد أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وما خلقت الجن والإنس إلا ليعبدون. I have not created jinn and mankind except to worship me. So this is the maqsad of the life, and this is something that even animals know about. So it is unbecoming that a Muslim, male or female, rich or poor, young or old, should ever forget that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam has emphasized salah, and that our maqsad here in this life is ibadah, just like the Quran says. So Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam prayed the Fajr salah one day, and after that he turned towards the people. He turns towards the people and he said, بَيْنَا رَجُلٌ يَسُوقُ بَقَرَةً that a person once, when he was driving his cow, إِذْ رَكِبَهَا فَضَرَبَهَا, and he started riding his cow, started sitting on the cow and he started riding his cow, and then he hit his cow. The cow said, إِنَّا لَمْ نُخْلَقْ لِهَذَا إِنَّمَا خُلِقْنَا لِلْحَفْظِ. We have not been created for this. A cow has not been created that you should sit upon it and you should ride it. We have been created for cultivation. We have been created for agriculture. We have not been created as transportation to ride upon. So think about this, that an animal that does not speak, Allah Azza wa Jal made it speak, and it knows for what it was created. Does insan, does Banu Adam know for what he was created? Do we know what our maqsad is? Do we know that why did Allah Azza wa Jal create us? He created us from ibadah. He created us for worshipping Him. وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. We have not created jinn and ins except to worship us. So this was Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And if you take just one aspect of the seerah, you can understand how it's related to every single aspect. The salah and the praise for salah is offered. The masjid is related to every single aspect of Islam. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam arrives in Medina. Shaykh Ali Tantawi rahmahullah, who wrote in his book Rijal min al-Tariq, who was a friend of Mawlana Abul Hasan al-Nadwi rahmatullah alayh, he writes that when Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam arrived in Medina, what is the first thing that he did? Did he have a festival to celebrate everybody giving him kingship, that now give me the mulk? No, he didn't want mulk. Did he make tributes and fees and impose them upon the people? No, he did not want wealth. The first thing that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam did was to lay the foundation of a masjid. And the masjid, in terms of the place where salah is offered, is a symbol of iman. It is a ramz of iman. In that same masjid, ta'aleem and tadrees was done. It is also a symbol of ilm and knowledge, because that masjid was also a madrasa. In that same masjid, issues would be decided by Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam with consultation and mashwara from the sahaba. So that place was also a parliament. So it was a ramz, a symbol of adl, of justice. That same masjid, the property, the land where that masjid stood, it was not usurped, it was not taken by force, it was not taken illegally, but rather it was purchased with wealth. This is a symbol of insaf, of fairness. In that same masjid, Rasulullah SAW, when he ordered the masjid to be built, he did not sit down and watch everybody else, the sahaba, do the work, but he also participated in the construction of the work. That is a symbol of democracy. And you see that around the masjid, how the masjid of Rasulullah SAW was built with very, very simple materials. It is a symbol of basata, simpleness and simplicity. So in this one action, the masjid being built for salah, you have ibadah, you have ilm, knowledge, you have fairness, you have insaf, you have democracy, you have every single aspect that Islam is connected to, just in one aspect of the seerah, and it is all connected right here to the masjid. And today, because we don't use the masjid for the same purpose, because we confine it and think that it's just for salah. If a person doesn't have time, he prays at home, or does this or that, we have lost that power, that spiritual ability that is there in the masjid, that ruhaniyat that emanates from the house of Allah Azza wa Jal, that a believer that visits the house of Allah Azza wa Jal 5 times a day, what does he take back home to his family, to his children? What kind of ruhaniyat, what kind of spirituality does he go back with to his family? And when we don't take that back, we see the effect of that in our children, in our family, because we are absent from it. It is like a person that goes and takes light and brings it back. If he's not bringing back any light, there's darkness and darkness. And we stay away from the masjid for days and days upon end, perhaps only coming in Jumu'ah, some only come on Eid. And then we expect that our children will have tarbiyah, will grow up to be good Muslims, our wives will obey, will make hijab. That won't happen, because that ruhaniyat is missing. We ourselves are not coming to get that ruhaniyat on the masjid. How can then we expect that at home? So this is the aspect of masjid that is so important, that Rasulullah SAW, in just laying the foundation of masjid, it becomes clear to us. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, you are aware of the very famous story, Aisha radiallahu anha asked him one time that, was there a day that was more difficult for you, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, than the day of Uhud? Was there a day that was more difficult for you than the day of Uhud? He sallallahu alayhi wa sallam told her that there was one day that was more difficult. The mafhum of the hadith is that this was in the 10th year of prophethood. In Rajab, around Rajab, Abu Talib had passed away. In Ramadan, just a few months later, Khadija radiallahu anha passed away. In the space of a few months, Rasulullah lost both his external and internal support. Both his external and internal support was gone. And that was so heavy, that was so difficult for Rasulullah ﷺ, that year is known as Aam al-Huzn, the year of grief. In this way, Rasulullah ﷺ, in the month of Shawwal, made his way to Ta'if to visit the leaders of Taqif, to invite them towards Islam. And so they did not respond to what he had to say. In fact, they let loose people on him, and they started pounding him with stones. They started cursing him. They started raining down on abuses until the blessed feet of Rasulullah ﷺ bled, until he was injured and hurt. And in this way, he didn't know where he was going. He stepped on walking. He didn't realize where he was until he himself says that I came to a place called Qarn al-Tha'alim, which is a mountain between Makkah and Ta'if. And he looked up and he saw a cloud. And in the cloud was Jibreel alayhi salam. And Jibreel alayhi salam told him that Allah Azza wa Jalla has heard how his qawm had responded to him. And he had sent the angels of the mountain to do whatever you want him to do. And so the angel of the mountains, he gave salam to Rasulullah and told him that what you have heard from Jibreel alayhi salam is right. So, إِن شِئْتَ أَنْ أُتْبِكَ عَلِيمْ بِالْأَقْشَبَيْنِ أَوْ كَمَا قَالِ سَلَاتُ وَسَلَامُ. If you want, I will enclose upon them the mountains. And Rasulullah responded, بَلْ أَرْجُوا أَنْ يُخْرِجَ اللَّهُ مِنْ أَسْلَابِهِمْ مَنْ يَعْبُدُ اللَّهَ وَحْدَهُ وَلَا يُشْرِكُ بِهِ شَيْئًا. Rather, I hope that Allah Azza wa Jal will take up from their loins, take up from them that person who will worship, those people who will worship Allah Azza wa Jal alone and will not make any shirk with him. Now look at this incident where Rasulullah, they cursed at him, they made him bleed. It was so difficult for him coming after the deaths of Abu Talib and Khadija radiallahu anha. All this thing happened, yet Rasulullah did not say anything. Did not answer the call of the Malik of Jibreel, the angel of the mountains, that yes, go ahead and pound them. Go ahead and finish them. So Rasulullah forgave. And he hoped that Allah Azza wa Jal would bring Muslims out of them. So this is on one aspect. And look at something that happened that was much less like than this. Even though it was against the adab, it was against the etiquette. A person who does not have any etiquette for Rasulullah ﷺ did that. That was a person when Rasulullah ﷺ was praying in Masjid al-Haram, and the kuffar were close by having their majlis. Among them was Abu Jahl. And they said, which one of among you will go and get the intestines of a camel that had been slaughtered the previous day, get the intestines and throw it upon Rasulullah ﷺ when he goes into sujood. So compare these two events, the event that happened in Ta'if, and this event over here. Rasulullah ﷺ went into sujood, and this person, one of them came, he put, it was Uqba ibn Mu'ayth probably, he put the camel intestine on Rasulullah ﷺ while he was making sujood. And Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu looking at this, and he could not do anything because he was not from among them. He knew that if he tried anything, he would be finished. And so they had to wait until Fatima radiallahu anha came, and she himself removed the intestines of the camel. When Rasulullah raised his head from sujda, he said, Allahumma alayka bi Quraysh. He said three times. He made dua against Quraysh. He said, oh Allah, let your wrath be upon Quraysh. And then Rasulullah started naming the people that were present there. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu said, every single one of them met their death at Badr. So the question is, in Ta'if, they cursed at him, they abused him, they made sallallahu alayhi wa sallam bleed. All this was done to him, and Rasulullah did not say anything. But here, when he went into sajda, and they put the intestines of the camel in, Rasulullah immediately raised his head and started making dua against them. What is the secret behind that? Mufti Taqi Usmani, Hafidhullah, says in his Sharh al-Bukhari, that the ulama have said that here they transgress all grounds. Before, that was something, in Ta'if, what was done later on, was something that was done to him personally. But here, Rasulullah had established a connection with Allah Azza wa Jalla in Salah. When they did that, they tried to break the connection by putting najis on Rasulullah's back. And they put najis on Rasulullah's back, they tried to break the sila, the connection between Rasulullah that he was having when a person is in sajda, closest he is to his Rabb. And they tried to break that. Now this gustaghi went beyond and it went against Allah Azza wa Jal. That is why Rasulullah took revenge for that, not for his own self. So this was how important salah was. Look, they did so much to him and he did not say anything. In Uhud, they did so much to him and he making dua for them. But here, when he's in salah, in sajda, and they try to break their salah by putting najis, by putting the intestines of a camel in, Rasulullah made dua against them. So this is the importance of salah. And then if you look at it, what is considerably more or less, but it happens. Today in Asr Salah, I was in one masjid, and today, the person, the music rang, and the music is playing repeatedly in the cell phone. Think, how can a Muslim affect the salah of other people in this way. And how important is salah? Look at how Rasulullah responded after they tried to break the connection between him and Allah Azza wa Jal when he was in salah. And we don't mind if a cell phone comes, and not only that it comes, they have it set to the latest songs and the latest music, and it goes with such loud sound. It's amazing that a person doesn't realize it, that he's in the house of Allah Azza wa Jal, and he does that. So my respected brothers and elders, that this is how important salah is. And look how Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam took revenge, not for his own sake, but for Allah Azza wa Jal, because that gustaki now had transgressed him, and now it was affecting Allah Azza wa Jal by they trying to break the connection between him and Allah Azza wa Jal. So this is something that is very, very important to understand. And Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam concern for salah, not only his own salah, but the salah of the ummah was so important. The Thawban radiallahu anhu narrates that one time a Bedouin guest came to us. And Rasulullah ﷺ sat outside the houses of his wife, and he started talking to him. And his questions, two main questions: كيف فرحهم بالإسلام وكيف حثهم على الصلاة. How is their happiness with Islam, the people that this Bedouin had left behind, and how is their affection, how is their love, how is their longing for salah? This is the question that Rasulullah ﷺ had for his ummah. These people that you have left behind, those people who are Muslims, how is their affection for salah? And this Bedouin Muslim Sahabi that came, he kept on telling him, فَمَا زَالَ يُخْبِرُهُ مِنْ ذَلِكَ بِالَّذِي يَسُرُّ. He kept on telling him those things that made Rasulullah happy. So Thawban radiallahu anhu said, حَتَّى رَأَيْتُ وَجْهَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ. I saw Rasulullah nadira. I saw his face radiant. I saw his face lighted up. That's how the face of Rasulullah, when he heard the good news about how the ummah was, how these people that this Bedouin Sahabi left behind, how their affection was for the salah. How they were longing for the salah, how much concern they had for the salah. And his face had lighted up. And compare that to what happened just a little while later, when the day had risen considerably, he called Thawban and said, go to the house of Aisha radiallahu anha, the mafhum, the hadith is, and bring some food for the guest. Bring some food for the guest. Thawban said that I went to the house of Aisha radiallahu anha. She said, وَالَّذِي بَعَثَهُ بِالْهُدَى وَدِينِ الْحَقِّ. By him in whose hands he has sent, Allah Azza wa Jalla has sent with guidance. I swear by Allah Azza wa Jalla, who has sent Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam with the huda, with the guidance and the true deen. Ma asbaha fi yadihi. I don't have anything in my hand. Ya'kulu ahadu min al-nas. I don't have anything that I can give. It's not some. I don't have food that would befit a guest, that is suitable. I don't have the food that would suit a guest. I don't have anything that I can give to a guest. There's no food here. And so Thawban came back and told Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He sent me back to every single one of his wives, every single one of them, كلهن يعتذرن بما اعتذرت به عائشة رضي الله عنها. Every single one of them had the same statement: there is no food in the house. So look at the concern of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. There is no food in any of the houses, but his concern is how is the ummah performing the salah and how much affection they have for the salah. This is the importance of salah that becomes evident to us, that becomes clear to us from the seerah of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. How much concern that he had not only for his own ibadah, but for the ibadah of the ummah. How they are performing the salah. How much concern they have for the salah. How much longing they have for the salah. This was Rasulullah's concern. And so later on what happened, a goat moved by and it had already been milked. Rasulullah called her, grabbed her, said Bismillah, restrained her, said Bismillah, and placed his hand over the area where the milk comes up, said Bismillah, and it filled up with milk. And Rasulullah called for a milking container and was brought, and Rasulullah gave it to the guest, and it was sent to the wives of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Rasulullah milked again and then gave it to the guest, and then Rasulullah drank it himself, and then he gave it to Thawban. Thawban radiallahu anhu said that when I drank it, فَشَرِبْتُ شَرَابًا أَحْلَى مِنَ الْعَسَلْ وَأَطْيَبْ مِنَ الْمِسْكِ. I drank a drink from that milk that was sweeter than honey and more pure than misk, because Rasulullah had drank from that. So Rasulullah's concern for salah was so much, respected brothers and elders, that Aisha radiallahu anhu was asked one time about what is the thing that was most amazing about Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. What amazed you the most about Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam? She stopped for a little while and then she cried. She said, what about him was not amazing? Everything was amazing about Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Then she mentioned one thing. One night it was my turn. He came to me, lie down until my skin touched his skin. And then he said to her, Dharini, leave me, let me worship my Rabb. She said to him, I love being close to you, but I also love that you make ibadah of your Rabb. I don't want to become an obstruction between you and your Rabb. If this is what you want, then go ahead. So Rasulullah stood up and he made wudu from a leather water container, didn't use too much water, and he started praying salah. She said he prayed salah until he started crying and he wet his beard from crying. He went into sujood, he kept on crying until the earth was wet from crying. Then he lied down on his side and he kept crying until Bilal radiallahu anhu came to him to tell him about the Fajr Salah, the time for Fajr Salah. Look at all these hours Rasulullah is crying. Bilal radiallahu anhu looks at Rasulullah crying and said, why are you crying? Allah Azza wa Jalla has forgiven your previous and future lapses. And before you became Nabi, after you became Nabi, when the word for dham comes in the Quran or any place else, it doesn't mean a sin like it means for us. It means anything that is khilafi awla. It is something that is not a sin, something that is a lapse. It's because Rasul, the Anbiya are masoom. They don't commit any sin. So Allah Azza wa Jalla has forgiven all your previous and future lapses. What are you crying about? What concern is there? So Rasulullah said, what will stop me from not crying? The mafhum of the hadith says, when this ayah has been revealed to me, إِنَّ فِي خَلْقِ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَاخْتِلَافِ اللَّيْلِ وَالنَّهَارِ لَآيَاتٍ لِأُولِي الْأَلْبَابِ. So Rasulullah was concerned how his ibadah was, how much concern he has, how much crying there was, how much dumu there was, tears that wet his beard, wet the ground, wet what he was lying, how much concern that he had for the salah and the ibadah of the ummah and for his own salah. And how did he do that? By way of targhib and tarheeb, not only through his own actions, but encouraging and warning the ummah through targhib and tarheeb. In targhib, we find that Rasulullah mentions that a person who performs ghusl and performs it very good, and that he washes his head very nicely, because in those days they used to put something in their hair, and so when he washes himself, his body and his head very nicely, and then he goes to the Jumu'ah Salat early, and he walks, and he doesn't drive, he doesn't take an animal, he doesn't take any transportation, he walks to the Jumu'ah, and he sits close to the Imam, and he sits listens very carefully, doesn't play with the things around the masjid, with the carpet, or with the clays, or with the pebbles. He does all these things. That person, بِكُلِّ خُطْوَةٍ يَخْتُوهَا, for every single step that he takes, أَجْرُ صَنَى سِيَامُهَا وَقِيَامُهَا وَقَمَا قَلَيْهِ صَلَىٰهُ وَسَلَىٰهُ, for every single step that he takes, he gets the reward of 1 year of fasting and 1 year of tahajjud salah. Every single step that a person takes from his home to the masjid for Jumu'ah Salah, fulfilling all these sharait, washes himself nicely, makes ghusl, washes hair, he comes early, doesn't ride, doesn't walks to the masjid, sits close to the imam, doesn't play with the things in the masjid, listens carefully, for every single step, he gets the reward of 1 year of salah, tahajjud salah, and 1 year of fasting. That is why some of the a'imma of hadith has said that لَمْ نَسْمَى فِي الشَّرِيعَةِ حَدِيثًا صَحِيحًا مُشْتَمِلًا عَلَى مِثْلِ هَذَا السَّوَابِ. We have not heard in the entire sharia of Rasulullah an authentic hadith that has this much sawab. Imagine a person takes 300 or 400 steps to the masjid for Jumu'ah Salat and fulfills these sharia, these conditions. He gets the reward of 300 years of tahajjud salat, 300 years of fasting. You can yourself compare how much sawab and ajr it is. Where is that ajr? What is this greatest ajr that is found? There is no more ajr that is found in any sahih hadith than this hadith. That ajr is in salah. That ajr is in salah. This is the targhib. This is how some encouraged people. At the same time, there was targhib that used to warn the people about not offering, that this is what's going to happen if you don't offer your salah in congregational salah. That is why you find that Rasulullah said, and he swore, that I thought about ordering firewood to be collected. To appoint a person to give azan, another person will lead the salah. Rasulullah will not lead salah. Why? I will go around to the houses of people who did not come to the masjid, and I will burn their houses down. Those men. That is why some of the a'imma have made dalil istidlal from this, that the congregational prayer is wajib. If there is no other excuse that is fulfilling, that is stopping him. So with targhib and tarheeb, look at how much effect Rasulullah is putting, how important this salah is, how important this prayer is, how important this namaz is. So don't put yourself back. Be very, very careful how you offer your salah. Be very careful how, and not only you offer your salah, but you offer with full concentration. That is why in the manaqib of Abu Hanifa, in some of the fiqh books, it is mentioned that when a person is offering a 4 rakat or a 3 rakat prayer, like Maghrib or Isha or Zuhar, and there's 2 tashahuds. In the first tashahud, he doesn't read darud, he doesn't read salawat. If he reads the darud, if he reads the salawat in the first tashahud, in the 3rd rakat, 3 rakat or 4 rakat salat, he has to make sujood to sahw. He has to make sajda to sahw, because the darud is in the last tashahud, not in the first tashahud. And so Imam Abu Hanifa, when he had decided and given fatwa on this, he saw Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam in a dream. And so Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam said to him, كيف أوجبت على من صلى علي? How did you make sujood sahw wajib on that person that sends salawat on me? Darood is such a big thing. How did you make sajdat us-sahw that a person has to make up this lapse? How did you make sujood us-sahw wajib on a person that offers salawat on me? Imam Abu Hanifa responded in the dream, بِكَوْنِهِ سَاهِيًا عَلِيْهِ وَسَلَّى سَاهِمْ He gave you, he sent salawat while he was in a state of ghafla. He was not paying attention in his salah. He was not paying attention in his salah. That is why I said that this person, because he did not send salawat, he did not send salawat correctly. He should have sent it in the next tashahhud. He sent it in the first tashahhud, and he did so out of ghafla, in a state of neglect. He was not thinking, he was not concentrating in his salah. That is why I made him do sajdatu sahw. فَاسْتَحْسَنَهُ مِنُهُ And Rasulullah SAW liked that response from Imam Muhammad. So this is so important that not only the salah should be offered, but it should be offered with full devotion, full understanding that I'm standing before Allah Azza wa Jal. الَّذِي يَرَاقَ حِينَ تَقُومُ That He sees you while you're standing. وَتَقَلُّبَكَ فِي السَّاجِدِينَ When you make your actions to go into ruku, into sujood, Allah Azza wa Jal is watching you there, watching you inside salah, and watching you outside of salah. So it's very, very important that we important that Rasulullah SAW in hadar, in safar, at home, in traveling, at home, in the masjid, always in salah, always in ibadah. This is what comes out to us from looking at his seerah. Ali radiallahu anhu narrated on the night of Badr. Look at how much travel they had to make. All the Sahaba are tired. He said every single one of us was sleeping except for Rasulullah. He was praying in bed. In the night of Badr, every single one of us was sleeping except for Rasulullah. He was praying and crying. This was Rasulullah. Respect brothers and elders in Islam, it is very, very important to understand how important Salah is in Islam because it touches every single one of us. There's nobody in this room that Salah does not touch. There's nobody in this room that should not pray salah if that person is over the age of 7 or over the age of 7. We should encourage our children to start praying salah so when they get to the age when salah actually becomes fard upon them, then they can offer that, they have the adab for that. Because look at how salah was made fard. Isra and Mi'raj. Is there a more wonderful story than the Isra and Mi'raj in the seerah of Rasulullah? Even the way that Jibreel alayhi salam came down, how it's recorded in Bukhari was different. The roof of the house of Rasulullah opened up and that's how Jibreel came down to take him on Isra and Miraj. And that was not the way that Jibreel would normally come because the angel does not need to open the roof to come down. But the roof was open. The ulama I mentioned, the reason was to show to Rasulullah that something very big and grand is going to take place. Something extraordinary is going to take place. How was Salah made fard? How did Isra and Miraj take place? Rasulullah was taken bodily into the heavens. This is how important salah is. It is something that we can never let go of. Something that is so, so important that we need to take care of. Finally, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam informed one hadith that I wanted to mention before ending. We started this talk that there was a cow that came and it knew what it was created for. And we should understand what we are created for. That cow said, I am not created to be ridden upon. I am created for cultivation and agriculture. Do we understand what we are created for? And do we guide and ask people, our family at home, our children at home, our relatives and other people in our workplaces, do we talk about Rasulullah and do we display the sunnah of Rasulullah so that we guide others to Rasulullah? Because animals guided to Rasulullah. Animals gave direction to Rasulullah. It comes in the Musnad of Imam Ahmad that there was a ra'i, there was a shepherd that was going. And so when he was going with his flock, with his sheep, a wolf came, and this hadith is authentic. A wolf came and it grabbed one of his sheep. So Rasulullah, this shepherd grabbed this sheep and pulled it out from that wolf, pulled it from the grasp of that wolf. This wolf, when he saw that his food is being grabbed away from him, he sat on his tail and he said, "Ala tattaqillah, don't you fear Allah Azza wa Jal? Tanzi'u minni risqan saqahu Allahu ilayya, that you take from me the risk that Allah Azza wa Jal has given me." Now you can imagine the surprise of this shepherd, a wolf is talking to. He says, Ya ajabi, ذِئْبٌ يُكَلِّمُنِي كَلَامَ الْإِنْسِ A wolf is talking to me in the language of humans? He said, أَلَا أُخْبِرُكَ بِيَعْجَبُ مِنْ ذَلِكَ Should I not tell you something even more wonderful than this? Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam bi Yathrib, يُخْبِرُ النَّاسِ بِأَنْبَائِ مَا سَبَقَ Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is in Yathrib, in Medina. He is telling people the news of what happened previously. This shepherd took his sheep and went all the way to Yathrib in Medina, put his sheep in one corner and told Rasulullah sallam this entire story. So this wolf, this haywan, this animal that does not speak is guiding people towards Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Go to Medina. Go to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Have we fulfilled the haqq of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam amongst our neighbors, amongst our family members, amongst our children? Have we told them about the seerah of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam? Have we informed them about the life of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam? When they grow up in this mahol, in this environment, and they hear, waliyadu billah, all those bad things that are being said, what will happen to their state of iman? What is going to counter that? What is going to defend that? When there is something that iman is full of, the love of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the seerah is present in their heart. They are there with that seerah, it's fulfilled in their heart. They look, they think, and when these things come upon them, they're able to say, no, my Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was not like that. Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was not like that. These are all lies. These are all fabrications that you are thrown. And that for the iman to be strong in this generation, in this time, a very intimate and thorough knowledge of seerah needs to be imparted and taught to our children. And that happens, inshallah. Inshallah, their iman will be secured. May Allah give us all the tawfiq.